Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. Next week, Queen Elizabeth attends a historic ceremony in Dublin, remembering the Irish rebels killed while fighting for independence from Britain. Among the fighters to be honoured are those who died in the Easter Rising nearly a century ago. Simon Watts has been listening through the archives.
It's Easter Monday 1916, and Irish rebels are trying to start a revolution against British rule. They set up their headquarters at the General Post Office in Dublin, where Stella Archer worked.
I was up in the instrument room where the telegraphs were. Round about midday, there was a commotion down in the street and the breaking of glass, and everybody wanted to see out through the windows to see what was going on. But shortly after that, the doors banged open and a number of men came into the room dressed in green uniforms with rifles in their hand. They ordered everybody to get out immediately.
The rebels quickly got to work barricading the GPO with almost anything they could find.
There was a scene of great activity there, and they were filling up mail bags full of coal, the only thing they could get, and the cellars were full of coal in the place. The first thing I knew, I was drafted into the coal detail, and we were nearly smothered. The dust was rising all over the place.
Now, the inside, we barricaded all the windows, barricaded with a lot of stuff that we got from the waxworks, effigies of the king and the queen, and we used them to stick on the windows.
Then the leaders, Patrick Pearse and James Connolly, pinned up a notice outside the post office.
Irish men and Irish women, in the name of God and of the dead generations from which she receives her old tradition of nationhood, Ireland, through us, summons her children to her flag and strikes for her freedom. We hereby proclaim the Irish Republic as a sovereign, independent state, and we pledge our lives and the lives of our comrades in arms to the cause of its freedoms, of its welfare, and its exaltation among the nations.
The Easter Rising happened during the First World War. Many Irishmen were fighting proudly alongside the British, but some nationalists saw the conflict as an opportunity. The rebels made contact with Germany, Britain's enemy, but crucially, a German submarine bringing them weapons was intercepted shortly before Easter. This deterred many rebels from joining the revolt, but it also meant that the British dropped their guard, thinking the plot was over. After the start of the Rising, there was a curious lull, as an Irish playwright, Thomas King Moylan, noted in his diary.
O'Connell Street was a very curious spectacle. All shops closed, the streets filled with wondering crowds of sightseers, and no vehicular traffic, except the ubiquitous bicycle. Across Abbey Street was a barricade composed of crates of brand new bicycles taken out of Keating's shop. No one seemed to be in charge of it. What a sight was the GPO. This building, which has recently been renovated, has every window smashed to atoms and the opening stuffed with what appear to be mail sacks. The glass from the broken windows was scattered wide into the middle of the street. A dead horse lay on its side amid a litter of glass, probably from the tram cars, of which a solitary one stood on the track.
The rebels won the sneaking admiration of some Dubliners, but those with sons away fighting in the World War booed and hurled insults. The poor from Dublin's slums were seen stealing shoes and fur coats from the main department store. But by the middle of the week, the pause was over and a huge British military counterattack had begun. Because Dublin was then surrounded by canals, the only way for the troops to enter was over its bridges.
Well, we were marching into Dublin, that was our orders. At a point, Mount Street Bridge, we ran into terrific rifle fire from houses all round. Very unpleasant indeed. Being fired at from you didn't know where, you didn't know who your enemies were, you didn't know who were your friends, you didn't know which houses were occupied by the rebels. We lost 11 officers and about 90 men that day. And we didn't get very much further than that point. I was wounded there. It was quite close to Sir Patrick Dunn's hospital. And the nurses came out in the hail of bullets, and they were just magnificent. Picked up the wounded, took them into Sir Patrick Dunn's hospital.
One rebel, Tom Walsh, along with his brother Jim, was in a building near the Mount Street Bridge, firing down on the attacking British troops.
We kept blazing away, and as one attacker was killed or wounded, another moved up and passed his dead or wounded comrade. This gave me the impression of a giant human khaki-coloured caterpillar. The armchair I was leaning on was now on fire, and Jim passed me a soda water siphon to squirt on it. But it was shattered to pieces in my hand by a bullet. After 8 hours of continuous fighting, fires had broken out around us, and it was almost impossible to find cover anywhere. Our ammunition was nearly exhausted. We were almost suffocated by the fumes from the smouldering furniture. George Reynolds then gave the order to evacuate the post.
The British soldiers had made it into central Dublin. A warship sailed up the River Liffey, and two huge field guns started shelling the GPO.
Well, they fought for poor old Ireland, and full bitter was their fate. Oh, what glorious pride and passion fills the men of 98.
Inside, the rebels sang patriotic Irish songs to keep their spirits up, but all could see that the game was up.
Footsteps at the rising of the moon.
The building shook again and again as the shells exploded. Finally, a firebomb struck us and started a fire which could not be put out. The roof now had to be evacuated as another bomb struck. The flames now grew worse and the fire worked downwards.
As far as we could see, the sky was just one enormous mass of flame. Tremendous, enormous mass of flame. And we felt that the whole centre of the city was being destroyed by fire.
The leaders, Pearce and Connolly, had no choice but to order the evacuation of the GPO. On the way out, the rebels came under fire.
I was approached by Jim Ryan afterwards, Dr. Jim Ryan. He told me to dig up one of the poles of a stretcher. And I looked on the stretcher and it was Connolly who was there. And we had to carry Connolly through this. And he was in terrible agony. Gangrene had set in the ankle where he was shot. Eventually we got him about halfway up the street and we were told to leave him there, that was going to be the headquarters. And then towards evening, before just while it was getting dusk, word came through the grapevine that Pearce had gone out to surrender.
The British took most of the rebels to prison camps, but the leaders were all executed. The last to die was James Connolly, strapped to a chair because of his injured ankle. His daughter Nora went with her mother Lily to visit him in jail.
So when we got in to my father, he said, "Well, Lily," he said, "I suppose you know what this means." I said, oh, no, not that. He said, "Yes, Lily." She broke down then and she said, "But your beautiful life, James," she said, "your beautiful life." And he said, "Wasn't it a full life, Lily, and isn't this a good end?" She still cried, so he says, "Look, Lily, please don't cry." He says, "You'll unman me." So she tried to control herself. I was trying to control myself too. And we were there, talked about little things. He was trying to plan our life for him after he was gone. And then they told us time was up and we'd have to go. He was to be shot at dawn, you see.
The Easter Rising did not achieve its immediate aims, but it did change the attitudes of many in Ireland. The executions made the British look cruel and turned the rebel leaders into martyrs. The events of Easter 1916 brought the real fight for Irish independence closer.
Simon Watts. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.